Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 28 days and counting until Americans head to the polls in what is shaping up to be a pivotal midterm election. California voters will begin receiving their ballots in the mail and can begin weighing in on the candidates and issues most important to them. One of those candidates who you'll actually see on the ballot twice is Democratic Senator Alex Padilla. Padilla is running to complete the current term he was appointed to after Kamala Harris became vice president, and Senator Padilla is also running for a full six-year term against Republican candidate Mark Moisier. I spoke with the senator last week about the challenges of rising above congressional gridlock and why he thinks the stakes are so high this November. Senator Padilla, thank you so much for joining us once again on Insight.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. As we know, you're a longtime California Democrat in local and statewide races. I believe this is like your third or fourth time on Insight since being appointed to the Senate. I just want to get a little temperature check. Congress is a different playing field. How's it going? What has surprised you most in the pursuit of really getting goals in the form of legislation across the finish line?
Yeah, you know, it's as I reflect on the last 21 months since I joined the Senate, I think it's been a heck of a lot more productive. We've gotten so much more done than people would have imagined, given, you know, the pandemic, given the insurrection last January, given an evenly split 50-50 Senate. But the rules of the Senate notwithstanding, I mean, within a few months of when I entered the Senate, we passed the American Rescue Plan, which, as you remember, the days before vaccines for COVID were widely available, the state of the economy, the state of the pandemic, it was urgently needed help for families, for local governments, for small business owners to keep their doors open. Last year, we also passed the bipartisan infrastructure law, historic investment in our nation's infrastructure. You know, flash forward to most recently, the Inflation Reduction Act, really cutting healthcare costs for millions and millions of Americans, including prescription drugs. And it represents our biggest investment in fighting climate change, not just in the history of the United States, but for any country around the world. So a lot to be proud of, a lot more to talk about, but that gives you a sense for just how much we have gotten done.
You know, we're talking about a lot of relief, but this comes at a time, I mean, especially in California, affordability and rising costs is a real issue. I mean, I don't even want to get into gas prices right now in California. A recent statewide survey by PPIC, Public Policy Institute of California, said economy and inflation is the top issue that is facing Californians. I mean, nearly 40% of respondents said that they're facing serious hardships. What is your message to Californians who are going through this, especially when you're talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and maybe they're not feeling the effects of that?
Yeah, no, look, I see it and feel it, not just as a U.S. senator. I feel it as a husband and as a father. You know, Andrew and I are trying to raise three boys. So when we buy milk, when we buy meat, when we're filling the gas tank, we see it and we feel it as well. You know, the good news is, again, Democrats in Congress are taking action. I'm shocked, to be honest, that not a single Republican joined us in passing the Inflation Reduction Act that reduces healthcare costs, extends ACA premiums for those who rely on that for healthcare, capping the cost of prescription drugs. I mean, that impacts everybody, Democrats, Republicans, red states, blue states. You know, so Democrats found a way to deliver. Part of what we need to do next is continue to reduce child care costs and reinstate the child tax credit, something that we didn't have Republican support for. So that's another way to help make ends meet at the end of the month when we're all paying our bills. And gas prices were up. They started coming down. They're a little, you know, tenuous as we speak. I'm working with Senator Elizabeth Warren to advance a windfall tax on oil companies and refund a lot of money to people who are paying the price at the pump. Because what's unconscionable, Vicky, what's unconscionable is while gas prices are sky high, the oil companies are making record profits. So they're clearly just taking advantage of the situation, and it's just flat out wrong.
Hmm. You know, I want to get into another poll, and this will be the last one, because polls are just a glimpse. I mean, they're not the end-all, be-all. But a national Gallup poll, it suggests that, you know, when talking about the economy and that it's a top issue among voters, but nearly half of those respondents believe the Republican Party is best equipped to tackle that issue. What is What does that tell you as a Democrat in the Senate? Can you understand why respondents feel this way?
Look, what it tells me as a Democrat in the Senate is that while we have a great story to tell, we got to go out and tell it. You know, the way that we've helped people through the pandemic with vaccines and direct assistance, the way that we are investing in our nation's infrastructure and creating hundreds of thousands of good paying jobs in the process is good for working families. You know, the action that we took, again, without Republican support, to reduce healthcare costs, to invest in climate change. California's Exhibit A on the impacts of climate change being felt today through wildfires and other extreme weather events. So between now and Election Day, you know, I know there's a lot of Democrats that are going to be on the campaign trail talking about what we've delivered and why we deserve another shot after November. Let me also add this. It's not so specific to the economy, but in terms of the stakes of the November elections, I mean, we caught a glimpse of what's to come if Republicans regained the majority in Congress when the Supreme Court ruled on the Dobbs decision, taking away a woman's right to choose. If you care about choice, consider this. Mitch McConnell said that if they regain the Republican majority in the Senate, they will advance a national abortion ban. Lindsey Graham didn't wait for the November election. He introduced it a few weeks ago. And that's just choice. The same logic the Supreme Court or Senate Republicans are using to roll back a woman's right to choose can easily be used to roll back progress that we've made on marriage equality, voting rights, and so much more.
Right. And I was watching a video where you laid everything out and saying what's at stake with the midterm election about a month away. I mean, for you, the solution is that people need to care. They need to get out. They need to vote. Can you give us a peek behind the scenes at the table? What conversations are you having about strategy and engagement?
Yeah, well, the good news is that here in California, and now I'm partially wearing my former Secretary of State hat, we make it easy for people to participate, regardless of your political leanings. Multiple options for how to register to vote, multiple options for how to cast your ballot, the ultimate in transparency and integrity of the ballot counting and certification process. But I think a lot of the conversations over the course of the next month are going to be about what's at stake in November and why your vote matters, the election results matter, and why Democrats should, you know, be given an opportunity to continue to be the majority in the Senate and continue to deliver for working families.
You touched upon how Republicans are the struggle of getting bipartisan support for legislation. And, you know, I'm just curious, because last time we talked, you gave examples of reaching across the aisle. I think the example was Senator John Cornyn of Texas, and you guys were finding a compromise and negotiating on energy. Have there been any other moments since then of collaborating with Republicans in the spirit of overcoming gridlock?
Yeah, there's a couple of examples that are worth pointing out. You know, last fall, the bipartisan infrastructure law was done, obviously, on a bipartisan basis. Earlier this year, we passed what's known as the CHIPS Act, significant investment in trying to restore our domestic manufacturing capacity for semiconductors, which are so critical in so many products from automobiles to appliances and electronics. But it's also a national security concern. That was done on a bipartisan basis. But on some of the most pressing issues for California families, whether it's trying to address inflation, trying to protect a woman's right to choose, increasing access to healthcare, reinforcing marriage equality, and more, Republicans just refuse to do the right thing. One of the biggest frustrations I've had this last year and a half is immigration reform. Countless Republicans will tell me in private that they support Dreamers, they support farm workers, or they value immigrants, but they can't bring themselves to say it publicly, and they certainly can't seem to be willing to vote even on bills that they'll co-sponsor. A series of bills that would better support immigrant workers in the healthcare industry. All right, we have a shortage of physicians and nurses and other allied professions in healthcare. Republicans have lent their name to legislation in numbers that can overcome the filibuster, but they refuse to vote for it using the southern border as a pretext.
You know, the big lie is still part of many campaigns. I know that's no surprise to you. Some of them are currently Congress members, and they're either raising doubts or rejecting the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election. How does that get in the way of collaboration? How do you even talk to your colleagues in Congress? I would imagine it can be an obstacle getting in the way of bipartisanship.
Oh, absolutely. And not just for me as a newer member of the Senate, but I talked to some of my colleagues that have been there a lot longer, who are known for being very bipartisan, how they approach their work, having a tough time trying to work with someone who challenged the outcome of the 2020 election and continue to refuse to accept that President Biden was duly elected. I mean, it's that fundamental, and again, coming back to the stakes of what's of this November's election, that's at stake. We're either reinforcing our small democracy or we're not. Thankfully, it's not the case in California, but if you look at candidates for office elsewhere in the country, true election deniers running for attorney general, running for secretary of state, running for county elections administrators, if they win, they would be in charge of overseeing elections in 2024, the next presidential. That could be a constitutional crisis like we've never seen before. So much at stake. I'll remind all voters in California, you know, double check your voter registration status and make sure you make your plan to vote.
Your opponent, Mark Moisier, an attorney from Southern California, do you have any plans to debate?
Haven't received an invitation to debate, but maybe I should correct my previous answer that we don't have a election deniers running for office in California. I think he is one of them. He certainly challenged and sued me along with Governor Newsom repeatedly in 2020 for our audacity to expand vote by mail and in-person early voting options in the midst of a pandemic. So I really don't think there's a value in giving airtime to someone who denies the outcome of the 2020 election, denies climate change is real, refuses to acknowledge COVID as a public health danger that it's been. So I think the choice is very clear for California voters.
More broadly, beyond your position as an elected official, as a former Secretary of State, really, do you think it's important that debates take place so voters have a deeper understanding of where candidates stand on the issues?
I do. I mean, that's what the campaigns are for. Candidates have an opportunity, I think, a responsibility to put themselves out there and have voters understand, you know, what they stand for, you know, what their priorities would be in if elected. I know I've never really stopped doing that, even while juggling my day job, which is in the nation's capital. And I've been traveling throughout the state of California since I've been in the Senate. I haven't gotten to all 58 counties again yet. I did that as Secretary of State. But whether it's to talk about the work that I'm doing or to seek input, you know, the Senate recently passed on a unanimous bipartisan basis the FIRE Act, the bill that I introduced to modernize FEMA to better prepare for and respond to wildfires. You know, they're pretty good at anticipating and responding to hurricanes and tornadoes and floods. But when it comes to wildfires, not so much. And so having visited the front lines of the Dixie Fire last year and the command center in Quincy, having had a roundtable with leaders in and around Santa Rosa talking about their recovery efforts over the last couple of years, that helped inform this piece of legislation. And I think that's governance the way it ought to be. Elected officials on the ground, listening to constituents, and then having their work in the Capitol reflect those priorities.
You also introduced legislation to establish an Office of Environmental Justice at the DOJ. How would that work? What does that look like?
Exactly. And that seems to be moving forward. The administration has seized on that concept and is moving forward while the legislation is advancing. And it's simply a recognition of this. We know there's a lot of environmental protection laws on the books. But what the enforcement of laws don't always take into account is that it tends to be the same communities that are impacted over and over and over again, whether it's air pollution issues, water pollution issues, you know, even soil pollution issues based on certain industries that use toxic materials. And so how can we have an environmental justice lens considered when we're holding polluters accountable, both in findings and liability, but also in cleanup and reinvestment. And so it's now a priority for the Department of Justice, and every U.S. attorney in every district in the country is responsible for designating somebody in that office to lead these environmental justice efforts. So a lot of good progress there that is going to impact every corner of California.
Finally, Senator Padilla, you're going to be taking up a little more real estate on the ballot. You're actually going to be on the ballot twice. You're going to be finishing the term you were appointed by Governor Newsom when Kamala Harris became vice president, and then secondly, to be elected for a full 6-year term. So if you are successful in that, what do you hope to achieve by the time your first term ends?
By the first full term.
Yes.
The question. Look, I think the climate change efforts are not going away anytime soon. So that'll continue to be a top priority, not just for California, but for the nation, the fight to restore federal voting rights as we enjoyed for 50 years will continue. I think I bring that unique voice of having been California's chief elections officer, you know, ensuring that we put into federal statute a woman's right to choose, marriage equality, so much of what's now at risk given the extreme Supreme Court. I'll also proudly share that being very well informed by my wife, who's a mental health advocate, that if, prioritizing mental health is going to continue to be a priority. We were in a crisis scenario before the pandemic. I'm talking about the whole country, not just parts of California. It's only been exacerbated during the course of the pandemic. So investing more in education, awareness programs, treatment, support, and research all across the board.
Senator Padilla, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Vicky. Hope to be back with you again soon.
We hope so as well. That was my conversation with Senator Alex Padilla ahead of the midterm next month. Up next, we'll break down CAP Radio's voter guide for the midterm, and the California Voter Foundation joins us about the big changes and additions this general election. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.